This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
It's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own program. This airtime is a free service offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge, talent, and passions. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed in Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Open Journal. We thank you for joining us today. I'm Dr. Christine Adams. I'm a psychologist in private practice here in Houston. And with me today is my colleague, Dr. Joe Bach, who is also a psychologist in practice here in Houston. We are both members of Healthcare for All Texas. Healthcare for All Texas is a nonprofit advocacy organization, and we are the Texas chapter of Physicians for National Health Program. Our mission is to educate the public on how a single-payer, Medicare-for-all healthcare system would provide affordable and comprehensive healthcare to all of us. The myth that we are debunking today is that mental health treatment is an extravagance that we cannot afford, that if we have generous access to mental health services for everyone, it will break the bank. So today we'll be talking about why access to quality mental health treatment should be available to all of us, and how the lack of mental health access does affect you, even if you do not have a mental health condition yourself. We'll discuss why this is true with our guest, Alejandra Posada. She is the Director of Education and Training with the Mental Health America of Greater Houston. She'll be talking with us today about what the mental health needs are here in Texas, the cost to Texans of not providing mental health treatment, and why Texas should accept Medicaid expansion funds. We'll be taking your calls during the show, so call us at 713-526-5738. So in 2008, passed in the United States the Mental Health Parity Law, and that law was designed to make mental health treatment equal in terms of being able to be reimbursed and covered as a benefit the same as any other health condition. Yet we still face extreme discrimination against people who are suffering from mental health conditions, both from a very serious mental illness to just sort of the worried well, as we call them, people who are suffering from depression and anxiety but can still go about and function adequately with their jobs and with their families, but still are suffering in a major way. The lack of funding, both in the public and the private sector, does make it difficult and sometimes impossible in many cases for people to get mental health treatments that they need, treatments that do work. Mental health treatments are quite effective these days, and we can do a great deal for people to alleviate their suffering and to improve their lives. And this difficulty accessing mental health treatment is also true for people who have so-called good health insurance benefits. For every dollar that we spend on depression to help alleviate it or cure it, if you will, we get a return of about $7 back to the economy. So there's quite a bit at stake for everybody, even, again, if you don't have a mental health condition yourself. Actually, mental health conditions are tied in third place with cancer, as when you look at the top five health conditions that Americans suffer from, mental health is tied with cancer in third place, and they are behind heart disease and trauma.
Thank you, Christine. Years of research have shown that quality mental health treatment is of great value insofar as it, number one, saves us money in medical costs, number two, it reduces human suffering, and number three, it improves health outcomes for physical illness. We know from research that patient benefits from mental health care when it is fully integrated into physical health care delivery. For example, 70 to 85% of primary care visits involve psychosocial mental health issues. Number two, 25% of Americans suffer from mental health conditions and are often seen in a primary care setting, seeing their primary care physician. Number three, people with chronic illness often have an associated mental health condition such as depression or anxiety. And number four, the presence of psychological and social problems worsen the outcome for physical health problems. We know that when left untreated also, that mental health conditions result in an expense that is shared by all of us. We all have to pay for this. First, patients that are diagnosed with psychological problems are typically heavier users of medical services. Estimates are that America wastes over $400 billion in each year in areas like lower worker productivity because of untreated mental health problems. When left untreated, mental health conditions result in unnecessary emotional suffering for patients and their families. When left untreated, mental health conditions result in higher costs to our justice system. Estimates in that regard are that 16% of people in prisons and jails are acutely psychotic. When left untreated also, mental health conditions result in state governments having to build more homeless shelters and prisons. Thousands of the mentally ill have joined the street people in many of our cities, and the county jail has become the primary community facility for housing most mentally ill people in the United States. Our current health insurance-based system actually interferes with, rather than helps you get, quality mental health services. First, mental health is carved out from medical surgical benefits, which limit access to mental health treatment and increases the stigma of having a mental health condition. Having a single-payer system would make it possible for mental health to be fully integrated into physical health care, and this would be good for our health and our pocketbooks. Numerous studies have shown that providing needed mental health services in a timely manner saves money in the long term on the medical surgical side of the equation. This is accomplished by a reduction in the number of unnecessary ER visits and overall better health of the person, therefore requiring fewer medical services. Single payer is the only healthcare system model that fully captures the proven cost offsets of providing timely, comprehensive, affordable mental health care services to everyone. Mental health treatments, services in general, and talk therapy in particular have been negatively affected by insurance and drug company domination of the U.S. healthcare system.
We're live on KPFT 90.1. The time is 9:38. This is Open Journal with Dr. Christine Adams and Dr. Joe Bach. We're talking today about why access to mental health treatment matters. Call us at 713-526-5738. Welcome, Alejandra. Could you talk a bit about what the mental health needs are here in Texas and what some of the indirect costs of not treating mental health conditions are?
Certainly. Thank you, Christine, and thank you for having me on the show today. Excuse me. I'd like to begin by pointing out that mental health issues touch all of us, regardless of whether or not we have a mental health diagnosis ourselves. We know that about one out of every four people experiences some kind of mental health disorder at some point during their life, which means that every one of us has family members, friends, colleagues who have experienced or are experiencing mental health issues. Of course, these issues run the gamut from milder to severe. And in Houston, about 5% of our population has what we describe as a serious mental illness, meaning that it limits their ability to function effectively in daily life. This means that about a third of our population is within the close social network, family, friend, colleague of someone with a severe mental illness. Unfortunately, Texas regularly ranks among the states that spends lowest on per capita mental health expenditures, and Harris County, in turn, ranks among the lowest in Texas counties for mental health funding per person. What this means is that there are large numbers of people throughout the state, and certainly here in Harris County, with mental health problems that are not receiving the help that they need. And this affects, of course, the individual and the family, but it also affects the community at large. What many people don't realize is that Houston takes an economic hit from untreated mental illness. In fact, we lose more than $5.5 billion each year as a result of severe mental illness in the form of decreased productivity and decreased earnings.
We have a call from Kathy. Please, Kathy, go ahead with your question or comment.
Good morning. Yes, I would like to see a law passed, because funding is a problem, whereby illegal people who come to our country, we see them on a humanitarian basis, but then we send the bill to the country where they come from. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. I think covering individuals who are undocumented, is indeed a major issue. Though there are also major issues with individuals in Texas who are documented and who are even American citizens who remain uncovered, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show.
What are some of the indirect costs that we have here in Texas from untreated mental illness, in your experience?
Well, we know that individuals with untreated serious or severe mental illness are often high utilizers of emergency rooms at a total cost of about $60,000 per year, much of which is footed by taxpayers. Likewise, I'm quoting the wrong number. That's a cost per one person for high utilization of services. But as I was saying, individuals with severe mental illness untreated are often high utilizers of emergency rooms, and they may also cycle in and out of the Harris County Jail. And those costs revert back to the taxpayers, because they are using county entities, county hospitals, and, of course, the county jail. It's much more expensive to provide services to somebody in the ER, in the hospital, or in jail than it would have been to provide community-based services up front and prevent things reaching that crisis point. For example, the cost of caring for individuals with mental illness in the county jail is more than twice the cost of providing outpatient care for the same individuals. I would also like to point out, somewhat as an aside, that the majority of people with mental illness in jail are there for nonviolent offenses. As the $60,000 figure that I quoted earlier is a one estimate of the services, including jail and hospital services, that might be utilized by one individual, a typical high utilizer of such services with mental illness, during 1 year. And by contrast, providing safe housing and appropriate mental health services in the community for that same individual would cost about $23,000 or $24,000 per year. So you can see there's a significant savings by providing appropriate care up front rather than waiting to the crisis point.
Yes, I read in one of the papers that 1 year of intensive treatment would equal 3 months in jail for untreated mental health.
Right, and there are quite a number of statistics like that. If we look at the actual costs of having somebody in jail or in intensive outpatient treatment or in hospitals or the ERs, and we see that, hands down, treatment in the community, even intensive treatment, is more cost-effective than waiting until individuals are in jail, in the ERs and so forth.
This is Open Journal with Dr. Christine Adams and Dr. Joe Bach. It's 9:44, and we are talking about why access to mental health treatment matters.
This is KPFT Houston. The time is coming up on 9:45, and here's a look at traffic and weather. On West Stem Houston Tollway, southbound at I-10, there's a three-vehicle accident. The left interchange ramp and right interchange ramp are both affected. And there is slow traffic on 45, the Gulf Freeway, inbound from Monroe to the 610 South Loop. Travel time there is 10 and a half minutes. And travel time also on the 610 West Loop, southbound from Shepherd to I-10, is currently almost 17 minutes. The temperature is 77 degrees. Skies are clear. And humidity is 57%. Today is expected to be mostly sunny with a high of 93 and a low of 75 degrees. Please stay tuned after the community spotlight for Bird Note, followed by Wide Open Spaces and at 10 o'clock, and then SOS Radio at 1 o'clock. And now back to the community spotlight, healthcare reform.
We're talking about mental health, why mental health access matters, and our guest today is Alejandra Posada with the Mental Health America of Greater Houston. Alejandra, I know you had described to me a program that the police department has that you saw as a good example of how prevention and taking care of the needs of mental health, people with mental health conditions, can actually save taxpayers money and reduce the suffering.
Yes, this is a great example of a program that illustrates how spending money up front saves taxpayers a great deal of money in the long run. Excuse me. The Houston Police Department has a nationally recognized mental health division within which the officers are highly trained to respond appropriately to events requiring police interaction that involve a person with a mental illness. One of the programs within the mental health division is called the Chronic Consumer Stabilization Initiative, or CCSI. This is a partnership among HPD, MHMRA of Harris County, and the City of Houston Health Department. This program began in 2009 and funded two licensed caseworkers to work with the individuals, the 30 individuals with serious mental illness that police responded to most frequently, these so-called chronic consumers of police services. The caseworkers worked with these individuals on everything from accessing appropriate housing to accessing medical services and many other needs. What's important to note is that many of these individuals actually were eligible for SSI and Medicaid disability benefits, but due to their severe mental illness had not been able to successfully access those benefits and services. During the first 6 months alone, this program led to a 70% decrease in events requiring police intervention for this population, which translates to a savings of 962 police manpower hours, or $40,000. In addition, admissions for this population to the Harris County Psychiatric Center decreased by 51%, and admissions to the Neuropsychiatric Center decreased by 21%. The total cost savings from decreased admissions was over $176,000, bringing the total savings for just these first 6 months of the program, including both police services and hospital admissions, to almost $217,000, which is substantially more than the salaries of the caseworker and other program costs. And since the entities experiencing these costs are all city and county entities, these savings ultimately translate into taxpayer savings. If we could provide more community-based services, like the one I just described, taxpayers would be getting a great deal of return on their tax dollars, and people with serious mental illness would be better off. On the other hand, waiting until a crisis leads someone to the ER, to jail, is a very poor use of taxpayer dollars, in addition to doing little to really help the individual with their mental health issues.
Alejandra, are you finding that there's increasing support in the community and also among people who can influence legislation on increasing programs of this nature?
I am. In fact, I heard somebody just the other day say that they felt like the mental health had kind of turned a page, and people across the board were really starting to see how addressing mental health issues was so critical. And this is really bipartisan. Republicans, Democrats, and people in all walks of life. So there's still a long way to go, but I do see growing recognition of mental health as a part of overall health and the importance of addressing mental health issues within the context of overall health. I know you mentioned integrated care earlier, and that's ultimately a necessary both for individual and public health, as well as for providing cost-effective care.
What can people do if they are interested in supporting more programs that would save money for taxpayers and be better for people with mental health conditions?
Great question. We have in Texas, we have our next legislative session coming up next year, beginning in January of 2015. Our legislature, of course, only meets every 2 years. So various organizations, including my own Mental Health America of Greater Houston, are gearing up for the legislative session to really advocate for bills and policies that will support increased funding and better quality care and access for people with mental illness and for all health care. So one really helpful thing that people can do is connect with an advocacy organization, certainly Mental Health America of Greater Houston, or if there's another that they feel an affinity with, and become part of that advocacy group, which means they would receive alerts to contact their legislators, or they might have an opportunity to make a trip to Austin to speak with a legislator. It's much more valuable when we take somebody from a legislator's own district than simply our staff who may live in another district. So that is one really concrete way to get involved, and this is the time to do it because organizations are right now gearing up for the next legislative session.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1. It's 9:51. We're talking with Alejandra Posada with the Mental Health America of Greater Houston. We are talking about why access to mental health treatment matters. Tag, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, yesterday KPFT had a judge on. I don't know if anybody heard that show, but it was really interesting. Same thing. The courts are actually developing three separate courts, one for mental health issues. One's a drug court. One's a mental health court, actually. And then the other one was for veterans. And they're all geared to keep people out of the jails and to get them mental health help. So do you know anything about that? And I'll take the answer off air. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so glad that that you brought that up, that those courts are indeed an excellent effort within our community to keep people out of jail and help get them to a place where they can just be productive members of society. And I'd be happy to talk with you further about that if you are interested. But those are some excellent initiatives in our community.
How can they reach you if they do want to follow up with more questions or know how they can help?
Sure. Probably the easiest way is to go to our website. That's www.mhahouston.org. And you can look for my name, Alejandra Posada, and send an email. Or if you send a message through our website, that'll eventually get to me.
Alejandra, could you also tell us why the Mental Health America supports Texas accepting Medicaid expansion funds?
Certainly. And Mental Health America does indeed support Texas accepting federal health care funds to close the health care coverage gap, which could be done either by expanding traditional Medicaid expansion, or by negotiating with the federal government to develop a custom-built so-called Texas solution, which would work a little differently. It could potentially use private insurance plans with reasonable copays. Either way, the federal government would pay 90% of the cost. The coverage gap that I'm referring to includes about 1 million Texans, and that includes about 66,000 veterans and their spouses. These are uninsured workers who earn less than poverty level, so less than about $12,000 for an individual or $24,000 for a family of four per year. Individuals in this income range were intended to be covered through Medicaid expansion. So they're actually not eligible for subsidies that give them access to reduced price coverage through the health insurance marketplace. Therefore, if their employer doesn't provide health insurance or if that insurance is too costly, given their low income, they are simply left in that gap, uninsured. Obviously, the situation is detrimental for their own health, but it's also costly for our state. Basically, we end up paying taxes twice for health care. We pay federal income taxes, but we don't receive the full benefits in the form of federal funding for 90% of expanded benefits. And instead, our tax dollars go for that benefit in other states. And meanwhile, we pay higher property taxes for local programs such as emergency rooms that are utilized by the uninsured. Those costs remain unpaid when someone uninsured goes into the emergency room and need to be paid somehow, so it comes back to the taxpayer. In fact, currently the yearly cost of uncompensated care provided by city and county organizations for uninsured Texans is over $4 billion.
My understanding is that the ACA reduced funds to hospitals for uncompensated care, expecting that people would be enrolled in the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, yes, that's a good point. Because the ACA was written to with the presumption that Medicaid expansion would occur, you know, other funds are shifting. So not only when we without Medicaid expansion, when uninsured individuals access services such as emergency room services, not only do they not have the insurance to cover that, but our hospitals, as you said, have less funds to cover that. And so, again, that's coming back to the taxpayers. But in spite of that huge taxpayer bill for uncompensated care, uninsured individuals, while they will access emergency room services and cannot be denied access to emergency services, typically cannot access preventive services or treatment for many conditions, including serious illness, such as cancer, diabetes, or mental health services.
Right, and that prevention goes a long way to saving everybody suffering and money. Thank you very much, Alejandra, for talking with us today and talking to us about why access to mental health matters. Our listeners, help shape the conversation on healthcare reform by emailing us with your comments and concerns about healthcare and what questions you'd like us to answer at info@hcfat.org. Those emails will help us decide about what our future shows will discuss. And I'd like to remind you that the Houston chapter of Healthcare for All Texas meets on the second Thursday of each month at St. Paul's United Methodist Church. You can find that information on our website, www.hcfat.org.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. We rely on listener donations. Visit kpft.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website with details. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces coming up at 10, and thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
This is Bird Note. Doesn't this sound enticing? Strenuous walks through thick jack pine. Temperatures ranging from below freezing to 85 degrees by late morning. And a heavy dusting of jack pine pollen. That's what volunteers should expect when counting one of our rarest birds, the Kirtland's warbler, in Michigan's Huron-Manistee National Forest in the annual census. We called volunteer Karen Markey, who knows the rewards of counting KWs, as she refers to them.
Well, you're walking a transect, and a transect isn't a path, it's just a straight line marked on a map. So when you walk this transect, oftentimes the trees are just so high and so dense that you have to go underneath them. You almost have to get on your knees and sort of waddle through the forest, almost like a duck. When it's raining or it's real dewy, you are a duck as you navigate through the forest. And as you go through, the needles from the jack pine and the pin oaks are hitting you in the face. We all just call this position the KW waddle. So it isn't the most comfortable of tasks, but certainly it's rewarding, and there's a chance you're going to hear and actually see a KW.
The Kirtland's warbler was one of the first species to be listed as endangered after Congress adopted the Endangered Species Act in 1973. Karen and others are helping federal and state agencies determine how well the recovery plan for the warblers is working. One indication, in 1974, the number of singing male Kirtland's warblers in Michigan was 167. Last year's census pegged them at close to 2,000 singing males.